Welcome to episode 68 of The Bull Run, the official podcast for snooker professional Stuart Bingham. This Cogito PR content is sponsored by renovation specialists R&J Carpentry and Construction, and this is a show in which I, sports journalist James Colasanti, ask the man nicknamed Bull Run about recent results, life on tour and life in general. Good morning, mate. How are you today?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Of course, yes. And now let me give that some context. So before we get underway, I just want to let you all know that we're recording today's episode with me in the UK and Stuart in China. We're doing this for the first time ever. Now, I won't bore you with the technical considerations involved in all that, but if the audio's a little bit different, then just please give us a free pass today. Okie doke. So that said, as Stuart just mentioned, it's 10:30 or just gone 10:30 a.m. over here. It's about half five in the afternoon there. Is that right, mate?
Yep, 5:35.
Yeah, nice one. What's the weather like over there? It's been blazing hot here, but what's it like where you are?
Yeah, we've had more or less the same weather. A couple of days it's had a little bit of rain, but most days I think it's up in the 32, something like that.
Oh, lovely. So just geographically, just place it for us, mate. Not that my China geography is brilliant, but just whereabouts exactly are you?
So we flew into Beijing, and then it was about a two-hour flight from Beijing. I'm not sure what way.
Yeah,
I did look, but I can't remember.
It's a huge country. It's difficult with the provinces and the way it's sort of, it's not geography like we understand it over. It's like boroughs and districts. It's kind of China's huge, isn't it? Basically.
Yeah, it's all provinces and things like that over here. So it's a bit confusing.
Yeah, of course.
Whereabouts we are, but obviously I fly back to Beijing on Friday, and then. Had to fly again to Xi'an for the Grand Prix.
Right. Yeah, it really is an extended stay, isn't it? I know you mentioned it's the best part of a month, basically. Okay, well, let's dig into the show. We'll start with the snooker. And it was some mixed results in the qualifiers late last month. A 5-1 Wuhan Open loss to Jing Zhihao and a 4-3 British Open win over He Gu Quang. So what was the story with those two matches, please, mate?
I think it was a bit of rustiness in the first match. 5-1, obviously. I played the guy once before. I beat him 6-0 in the UK Championships, I think. So I remember it had been 6-0, but it was like a close 6-0. It's sort of like he just lost out through the sort of colours, but obviously this time he didn't really miss much. I missed a couple of bad balls. I missed a pink in the first with all the reds all dotted around it, and I missed a black having a chance to clear up to win with a few reds left. I missed a black off a spot. Obviously just them two sort of misses sort of made the way for the match, really. I think I was 3-0 down, made a 90 break to go 3-1, and then just a couple of makery safety errors, I think. But I think he potted some good balls to get in, and it's just one of those, can't put the finger on what happened, but my mindset was a bit different. I maybe tried to play not to lose instead of to win.
Right.
And that was the difference between that match and the next match for the British Open.
So the British one, you approached sort of slightly more conservative, slightly more match play, and obviously that's paid off there, sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Like I say, the first match I played, I played not to lose. Instead of playing the British Open, I played to win. I went a bit more attack.
Sorry, I've got it around the wrong way. Of course, yeah. You went all out and played more your natural game in the British. You said, yeah.
Yeah. So I went 3-0 up, and then. It was like I just could not get over the line. Everything that could have gone wrong was going wrong.
Yeah.
I think I made, 4-3. I think it was something like 6 breaks over 50.
Hmm.
I should have won. I had a chance to win 4-0, 4-1, 4-2. Luckily, in the end, I made it 4-3.
Yeah.
He needed a snooker at 3-1 with a red left to end up. getting it on the, I think, yellow or something. He got me in the snooker. I got out of it, but got a double kiss, went in off and left him a free ball. So he cleared up from there to go 3-2.
You're starting to think one of those days, you know, it's snooker gods are against you. Are you starting to get that feeling?
It's really weird. Like I say, next frame, I remember being on a break of 64 or something. I was 35 up with 35 on. I missed the easiest of reds. Two shots later, he got me in a snooker. It took me four or five goes to get out of it. Right. Got out of it, he cleared up. That was thrill. And even the last frame, I made a 60-odd break to win. But I potted an unbelievable blue to sort of keep the break going. I think I put it on Instagram or one of the world snookers sort of tagged me and sort of, it's one of those, it was like, I might as well go for it.
It was a worldie, is it? Talk me through it, because I haven't seen it. What was it, a cut or a long one? What was it?
I ended up getting out of position. I potted a yellow. It was like just off straight, and the angle I got off it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it left me really low on the red, so I ended up playing a red off another red, potted it.
Yeah.
The white finished up in the green pocket, and the blue, I think I could just get past the green to pot the blue, but I was on the top cushion.
Ooh.
The bulk cushion, and obviously dropped it in, and I couldn't help but found to be on the red.
What was it, kind of dead weight, sort of one of them, was it?
Yeah, it's one of those. So
nice.
It was all or nothing.
Oh, a clutch one as well. Oh, good work, mate, yeah. We've obviously mentioned you're out in China. It was a 4-week stay, I think you said. And primarily, it was to take part in the latest Hable Masters pool event. And just before we get into the match action, I've got to say the production quality for that event is something else. I was doing a bit of prep for the show this morning. I watched some of the opening ceremony, and it really is no expense spared. Having a go at the rivaling the Olympics, I reckon. But I just wonder, with that side of things, does it make it all the more fun for you and other top snooker players who take part there?
Yeah, like you say, there's no expense spared. Their future is to get into, I think it's the 32 or 30 Olympics?
Yeah, we've got 28 in LA, and then, the rotation would be 32. Yeah. Right, oh, I see. That's sort of part of the game plan for them, is it? To hopefully get an Olympic recognition sort of thing.
Yeah, that's why they're inviting people from all over the world. There's right. obviously some South Africans, some Russians.
Yeah.
And all obviously snooker players getting involved. And obviously, like, English pool players as well, so... it's getting really big. It's getting really good, interesting, and like you say, no expense spared. They put on a proper show. I think World Snooker could learn a bit from them, I think.
But
maybe we've got no budget, really. Obviously, the end goal is to try and get it in the Olympics, because it's good, because it's a bit of everything. It's a bit of snooker, it's a bit of nine ball, it's a bit of eight ball.
Yeah.
It's just a good game to be involved in at the moment, I think.
And guys like you, obviously, high profile from the snooker, world champs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you in particular, you're slightly ambassadorial with this. You know, you're a figurehead, I suppose. You're helping them. You're raising the profile, and you're a big part of their kind of strategy, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I know Mark Williams is an ambassador for it. Mm. So. Yeah, obviously I'm trying to sort of wing my way in.
Yeah.
There are obviously talks at the moment, but we'll just see. But it's obviously, I think it's like you say, us snooker players, some figureheads that are doing well and putting it out there. It's weird because you're away from obviously snooker, but a lot of them, even all the top Chinese Hable players, they're sort of like, oh, can we have a picture and all that? And it's a bit weird because
right.
It's like, obviously, the different from the different sports.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You know, obviously you've got a natural divide. You've got a pool player and a snooker divide sort of thing. You know, is there, do you sense there's any friction between the two? You just mentioned that kind of reverence. What's the relation? What's it like when you play a top pool player sort of thing? You know, what's the chemistry like, I suppose?
Yeah, it was good because obviously this is what my third tournament, and this is the first time I got past the last 64.
Yeah.
So I come in at the last 64. So it's stages.
Yeah.
So I come in at stage two, and you've got to win 2 out of 3 matches.
Right.
To get through to the next stage, obviously it's like a double elimination.
Yeah, yeah.
So normally there's 32 international players, 32 Chinese players. So obviously in stage two, stage three is obviously 16 international, 16 Chinese, and we all meet.
Right.
So the first stage, all you can play is international players. So they do it in obviously sections. So got through that, and then obviously got a chance to play some of the top Chinese players. And obviously my first game, I won.
Yeah.
I won 13-11 in the last 32.
Yeah.
End up losing my next match to a Chinese player. It was pretty good. I just lost my concentration, wasn't good for the match.
Right.
And then my third match in that stage, I ended up winning 13-2, I think.
Right.
Where everything went right, breaking good, clearing good.
Mm.
And obviously the lad I played, he was a bit sort of shell shocked, I suppose, something like that. But everything for him went wrong, which it can easily go for this game.
Can it get away from you? Is that how it is with Paul? Sort of like you say, the frames themselves, does it move quite quickly? I haven't sort of sat down and sort of watched it all for, you know, what's the kind of rhythm of the game? Is it one where you get on a roll as a player and you can just rattle them off sort of thing?
You can do, but it can swing on one shot as well.
Right.
You obviously you've got a break and you can obviously break and run. So, you, sort of like, I think one of the matches, Gareth Potts was 5-0 up on Andrew Paget, and I think it went 5-5 just by one shot.
Mm.
It can all swing on a missed ball or one bad shot. But, it's good. It's interesting. Like you say, you break, obviously, it's a 4-point rule. So, you break off and you've got to get 4 balls behind the bolt line.
Right.
So you've got to hit them, obviously, pretty hard.
Yeah, it's a smack sort of thing, yeah. Are you always looking to sink something off that? Is it key to do that? You need to get in sort of thing. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Mm. So it's, like you say, there's, try and say there's a skill break.
Mm.
So you sort of hit them a certain way and then you can pop 2 balls in the middle pocket.
I see, right. So what's your percentage like on that then? How many times do you land that, would you say?
Well, obviously, one of the matches where I won 13-2, and I think I won another match 13-5.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was knocking the ball off the break near enough every frame I broke
right,
off.
Right, right.
So, but then the matches, obviously, when you struggle,
yeah,
it's like, no, like, it, they obviously, they've got a like a triangle, like the 9 ball.
Yeah.
Where you put the balls in the triangle and it all pushes them together so it's all tightly packed.
Yeah.
And obviously it should break the same, but each table plays differently. And obviously my last match I ended up losing, 15-11, I think I lost.
Right.
I had 5 illegal breaks where obviously I didn't get the 4-point rule. So
is that quite common to not achieve that, the four ball? Kind of, is it, you know, is it like I say, quite, you know, fairly regular, like, you know, you won't kind of make that mark sort of thing?
Well, funny enough, some of the Chinese players, they don't have any legal breaks a match, so obviously there's a certain way of hitting them, and but I was trying everything I can. Once you get to 3 illegal breaks, you lose a frame.
Right. Oh, okay. Right.
Or you give them a frame, and if you get to 6 illegal breaks, then you give them 2 frames.
Right, okay.
So there is a bit of a, obviously a way for you to not try to keep trying the sort of skill break.
Right.
So you get to 2, and then you've just got to smash them as hard as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the balls can go anywhere, and then it's all a bit messy sometimes. But yeah, normally if you get a couple of balls in the middle, the balls are quietly like nicely spread out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite easy to start clearing up, sort of having a rack and run.
Yeah, it's deep. I mean, you get into the strategy. And, I mean, we haven't even got into the skill shots that probably are the ones that are clutch shots and make or break it. But, I mean, look, overall, do you think you're getting better at the game? Do you think every time you play one of these, do you come away from it thinking, I'm a bit better now, I'm a bit more tournament ready sort of thing?
Yeah, it takes you sort of way probably a match or so to get back into it. Obviously, I don't practice it at home.
Mm.
Yeah, so every time I come here, I found myself a queue now. Andrew Padgett's selling queue, so
right.
I've ended up getting a queue off him, and it feels pretty good.
Oh, nice.
But so yeah, obviously my third tournament, I've used 3 different queues. So
yeah.
But this one might be a keeper.
You've settled on one, have you? So, Just finally on the practice at home. Obviously, we know you've got the snooker table. Any chance for an extension and the pool table going in? Or?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind, but it's just not big enough.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So there's no chance. But I know Gareth Potts. He's up near sort of Stoke on Trent.
Yeah.
He's obviously invited me up to have a practice and all that with him. So
yeah.
If I really get into it, any sort of deeper than. I suppose I could go out and practice and play.
Yeah.
But for the time being, it's a sort of obviously big money. It's it's like $280,000 to the winner in this one.
Wow.
So it is big money. It's something to be something to take seriously, considering
100%.
Like going forward at that.
Not to mention the fact that obviously there's an Olympic gold medal up for grabs for you in what we're looking at 6, 8 years. Yeah, there you go, mate. That'll be solid. Yeah. Just away from the pool, obviously you're out there on the trip. You sent me some brilliant photos of you being wined and dined in the local area yesterday. Just on that, just where was the restaurant? Who were your hosts? And importantly, how was the grub?
I'm one of the maybe very few snooker players that do like the Chinese food.
Right.
So when I lost my last match, I had this picture done with this guy.
Mm.
He was the president of the CBSA, Chinese Billiards Snooker Association.
Right.
And he's got a restaurant and a club, snooker club or pool club.
Yeah.
In Bayonore. And so he obviously invited me to. Obviously for a meal that night, and a few of my friends, Andrew Padgett, Matt Selt and all that were leaving, so I said I can't tonight, but then he said about having lunch the next day.
Mm.
So obviously my plan was to go to Beijing for a few days to practice at the academy, but got speaking to the guys who obviously owns the club and the restaurant. He said he'll reek off a table for me. There's one star table in Bayonore, and it's in his club.
Mm.
And it's getting reclothed as we speak, so I could stay here instead of going to Beijing.
Oh, brilliant.
And practice here for the next few days, obviously ready for the Xi'an Grand Prix. So obviously I had all the food. Obviously the last few days we've had hot pots.
I saw, just for anybody, I mean, lovely to hear you getting the VIP treatment, but just on the food, I mean, Stuart sent over a video. I mean, first of all, there was a lethal measure of alcohol on the table at one stage, but Stuart just mentioned the hot pot is there again, taking your life in your hands as far as I'm concerned. It looked like a fairly raw piece of meat that you showed to some boiling water for about 30 seconds and then necked it. So how was it anyway, mate? Was it nice?
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah, sometimes you can overcook the food.
But, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like as soon as it don't go pink, like as soon as the pink's gone,
yeah,
then it's good. You sort of dip it in your sauce that you sort of make up yourself.
Yeah.
I love the Chinese food.
Yeah.
But they just don't stop eating. It's like we went out for lunch today.
Yeah.
And then we're going maybe probably in an hour or so, out for dinner.
Yeah.
And I'm done for the day. But they just keep on. That's how they sort of show respect for their guests, sort of thing, and like say doing a little mini exhibition at his club.
Lovely.
Obviously for him recloughing the table. I said obviously about doing that. So it's going to work out good.
One. Bringing you back to real tedium here. This is the part where into the show where I weave Carla's ever so clever question as we rebranded it last month. Now, I'm thinking about throwing this section open to your own missus, Michelle, or maybe your mum and dad, but I'm a little bit worried about what they might ask you, but we'll see. Watch this space. But anyway, for this month, here's Carla's question. She said, have you ever known any colour-blind snooker players? And did that condition affect their performances?
I remember Peter Ebdon was.
Yeah.
He was colourblind, I think, with a red and a brown. I think Mark Allen is.
Yeah.
And I think even Mark Williams is.
Right.
So, I think they've, a couple of times, they get mixed up with the brown and the red.
Yeah.
You don't really hear a lot of it, but every now and then you'll sort of watch a match and you'll point out and you're like, what's that? And then you forget that obviously they're colourblind. So that's a valid question from Kai. That's actually quite a good one.
I didn't know if it passed the quality control test, but you know that's what she wanted to know. So there you go. We will let her know. Brilliant, thanks. Yeah. And so finally, just let us all know when you're back home, mate, and what's next for you in terms of competitive action, either obviously on the snooker or the pool table?
Yeah, obviously next week, Monday, it starts the CN Grand Prix. So, like I say, I head over there on Friday and then play that. I was meant to go from here straight on to Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
Which starts, I think my first match is on the 1st of August.
Mm.
1st of September, sorry. But now it looks like I'm flying home and then having a few days at home before flying there.
Mm.
I'll see the first big tournament in Saudi, obviously a ranking event.
Yeah, you're looking, forward to that?
Yeah, I think it'd be good. Obviously, it'd be a great sort of warm up. This is the Xi'an Grand Prix, obviously that's a big tournament itself, so
yeah,
it'd be nice to go deep, play the right game, go attacking, and obviously the Saudi Arabia is like another world championships. It's prize money is very good.
Yeah.
It's obviously $500,000 to a winner.
Yeah.
So I think Saudi might be sort of taking over China. I'm hearing rumours of Qatar or Dubai or some, one of them out there getting busy trying to put on another tournament. So, I see that being really big.
Yeah, you've preempted a few of my questions. I think we'll probably, a future show, we'll do a deep dive on all that. I know we've touched on the Saudi thing before, but, you know, a lot of my work is often, dealing with articles and reports about Saudi, obviously the Crucible, maybe moving on, and Barry Hearn obviously talking about how, you know, the money that Saudi brings is better for the players, better for the game. It's a big picture, isn't it? But the bottom line is, like you said, you've nailed on the head. You can't ignore Saudi Arabia. It's coming, isn't it? It's got the money, and it seems like there's a pool there, sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Great stuff. Okay, well, we'll leave it there for today. So, as always, it only remains for me to say thank you very much for your time today, Stuart, and to wish you a safe journey back to the UK.
Yes, yeah. Thank you in Chinese.
Lovely stuff. Nice touch. Yeah.